Now, I don't know what's going on in your life, but, you know, at some point, lazy's okay. And apparently you don't know the definition of that word.
I'll tell you, for so many years, the two terms, lazy and offensive lineman, they were always in the same sentence. So I'm trying to change that stereotype. What can I say?
Now, hey, we get offensive linemen that call the show all the time and say, look, they're better looking. They're certainly more intelligent. They're better athletes than people give them credit for. And Sandy, looking, you know, sort of back over the years, 89-ish when you were at Western, your first year?
Yep.
And you look at the progression of offensive linemen. I've talked about it for the last probably month. The quality of athlete that's on that offensive line in the CIS, not only are they bigger now, Sandy, but these guys are pretty good athletes. And, you know, when the NFL starts knocking on some of these guys, you realize just how far this position has come.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you do, you look for a prototypical athlete. And I know back in the day, a lot of teams were recruiting tight ends and basketball players, and with the hope that they'd have the work ethic to get into the weight room and put on the necessary pounds to kind of play on the offensive line. Anytime you can get an offensive lineman that's agile and quick on his feet, I think it bodes very well for your quarterback surviving a whole season. So, yeah, it's a different kind of athlete these days. And, you know, there used to be a time when you'd go to training camp to get in shape, and now it's kind of a full year kind of endeavor. You work in the off season and you go to training camp prepared, and I think that's the difference between when I first broke into the league and some of the athletes coming out of the CIS now.
Who was the quarterback for your team back at the Mustangs? Who was that?
John LeClair. And then we had Chris Gaffney and went to Eric Ercik. So we had some good ones. But I know we won a Vanier Cup in 89, and that was probably the pinnacle and highlight of my collegiate career anyways.
Well, you take a look at who has come out of that school, and of course, you know, Jimmy Bowen, of course, where people go, you know, back to that all the time, and the discussion always about the possibility of a Canadian quarterback in the CFL, and it's very, very difficult simply because of that position. They'll call it a skilled position, which I think sometimes an insult to everybody else who's on that football field. Yeah. You know, there's skill to everything, and sometimes they talk about the number of reps, the amount of coaching in terms of technique and mechanics that the guys get south of the border because of the enormous emphasis put on football. But at some point, is it conceivable that you could see a Canadian kid start again in the Canadian Football League?
Well, I think the knock has always been the level of competition, and I know when you go back into the 70s, you talk about Jamie Bone, who had a stint with the Dallas Cowboys, and Steve Samways, who had a stint with the Cincinnati Bengals, both good Western quarterbacks, both in the 70s and the 80s. But the big knock, I think, is trying to overcome the stereotype that the level of competition in the CIS just isn't kind of up to par than what you see down in the NCAA. And let's face it, when you're a quarterback kind of thrown into the mix and you're in a pressure cooker, I think that's when you see the talents of a quarterback come to the surface, and I think that's what they want to see. And let's put it this way, there's no greater pressure than playing in a Rose Bowl in front of 100,000 fans or in a national championship game on a Saturday night. So I think those are the intangibles that they look for in a quarterback, and unfortunately, those are some of the things that they look for in a pro-level quarterback. And until the level of competition kind of rises to the level of the NCAA, I think there's going to be some serious stereotypes to overcome with respect to Canadian quarterbacks.
We're in conversation with Sandy Annunziata here on the Fan 960 and Fan960.com. You know, looking at your various experiences, and I think sometimes you can look at a human being and just see sort of the road that they've taken to get to where they want to go. And very often, once they get there, they want to go someplace else. I think you fit into that category. And I'm just curious, why this kind of motivation, where some guys, you know, would be very happy to have a career like you did, 11 seasons in the CFL, maybe become a rep for some other company, but that's simply not your way. So what is it about the Annunziata family that has you so motivated?
Well, I like to think that I was just an ordinary person surrounded by extraordinary people, and I know going through my career, I had the help and guidance of a lot of good people in my collegiate career and my CFL career. And let's face it, you can have no better role model or mentor than Mike Pinball Clemens. And I think what he inspired on me most is the giving back element. And I think you're only as successful as the people you surround yourself with. So I think there's always been this entrepreneurship about me, and I think there's always been you know, this element of investing in your social capital, giving back to the community and seeing what comes back. And I've been very blessed and very fortunate that in my life, the more I've given, the more, so to speak, it has been given back to me. So I think that's just a formula that's successful in anyone, you know, branching out after a professional football career.
And I suppose when you're sort of a product of a given environment, it also tends to have a bias in certain fields. And it's interesting that, you know, when you talk about sports management and obviously relationship, Gil Scott, someone I know very, very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's because of, I think sometimes, you know, you're in a situation if you're representing yourself. And let's say you're playing for a team that you respect very much. But it also might come down to a situation when someone is also the coach and general manager, which I think is a very difficult situation because you're dealing with both on-field activities and then, of course, contractual obligations. And then all of a sudden it puts you in an awkward situation if you know you're going to play. But if you don't get the dollars you want, it is so much better to have someone representing yourself, although there are still circumstances like Alexander Ovechkin who can go in there and negotiate their own contracts. But to me, it always is difficult to play both sides of both the athlete and the businessman.
Yeah, and you hit the nail right on the head. And there's a paradox when it comes to contract negotiating and representing yourself. And at some point in my career, I just got tired of listening to GMs and coaching staff tell me that I wasn't worth what I was asking for. And unfortunately, that's the nature of the business. You have management that's always looking for a quality product at the cheapest price, and you have a player that wants to get full value for his services. And to tell you the truth, you know, when you're negotiating for yourself, I mean, I had to go and negotiate with people that I respected and that I trusted and that I liked, like Pinball Mike Clemens and Paul Mazzotti when they were in management with the Argos. And I didn't want to have that acrimony or that animosity afterwards, because I understand that they had a role to serve and they understood that I was coming from a different perspective. So that's why I think you have to seek quality representation and get those people to fight your own battles, because at the end of the day, you know, you don't want to lose friendships over business. And I think that's the most important lesson that I learned.
Well, and if it's Annunziata doing negotiating with a Mazzotti, maybe you gotta take a trip to the mountain and talk to family. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. I'll make him an offer he can't refuse. Forget about it.
Yeah, that's right. Get Morielli in there and go, why can't you get your Cajin to stop talking stupid? Why does he have to do this?
Exactly.
We're in conversation with Sandy Annunziata here on the Fan 960 and fan960.com. Now, of course, there's now a political side to this, which I would think at times might be more frustrating than taking on rushing defensive linemen.
Well, I always tell people, you know, they say, well, that's kind of a strange segue from professional football to politics. But I always tell them they both have their inherent dangers. And the biggest difference, though, is at least in football, I saw the enemy coming at me from the front, where in politics, they tend to sneak up on you from behind. So, like I said, they both have their inherent dangers, but there's elements that kind of cross over and are transferable. And you know, I really enjoy you know, public service and you know, the impact that I can have in my community anyways.
And you know, when you talk about that community, and again, you had the 1 year in Hamilton as Sandro DeAngelis now is playing basically in front of his family. Does it make a difference? And the reason I ask this is I know Sandro very well, and he's you know, a very competitive guy. And one of the reasons he wanted to go back to that region was to see his family again, to play in front of his family. And yet he's having some struggles, which for a kicker, generally, it's not the mechanics of what he's doing. It's between his ears. And I just wonder, being back after all these years in front of his family, is there an added pressure?
I always think, yeah, I mean, definitely, I think there's an added pressure. But I think, you know, with some of the pressures that are relieved by coming closer to the family, there is other elements that you don't really bargain for. And, you know, Sandro has a situation right now where, like you said, it's in his head. And as long as he doesn't do anything too drastic and start, you know, altering his mechanics, you know, he's going to get out of this funk and he's going to do just fine. But I think the goal of every professional football player is to kind of come home. And you make your bones, and if you like the community that you're working in and that you live in, then it's nice to lay down roots and maybe start a family out there. Ultimately, though, like I said, the goal is to kind of get back into your own backyard for friends and family and maybe spend the twilight of career in front of those loved ones. So, you know, I know exactly where Sandra was coming from, and I know he has a lot of respect and a lot of love for the city of Calgary. But at some point, it's time to come home, and he has a family to consider. And young Max is at that age right now where he probably needs his grandparents and his aunts and his uncles. So it was a good decision on Sandra's part, I think.
You know, just curious, of all these decisions and opportunities that you've had, you continue to move on. There's lots of, career choices in your life simply because you're that kind of person. Did coaching ever come into your mainstream and on your radar at any point?
That's a great question, because I'll tell you what motivated me more than anything else, and that was coaches in general telling me that I wasn't good enough. And I remember I was drafted by the Calgary Stampeders in my first training camp there. You guys had an offensive line coach named George Cortez, and the first meeting we had, the first words out of his mouth were, "You Canadian boys are 3 years behind all your American counterparts, so you guys got to work extra hard." And, you know, he used that great American twang that he had, and that motivated me. And I worked my butt off, and you have to kind of have thick skin when you're a professional athlete, and you kind of have to let it roll off your back and spend those hours in the weight room and spend those hours on the practice field getting better. Now, there's no such thing as a free ride. So, the more that you can work at your craft, the more acceptance there's going to be. And, 11 years later, I was happy to kind of be inspired by those words anyways.
Hey, I have to ask before I let you go. So, Annunziata, is that a Napolitana name? What is that?
That's a great Napolitan name, and it's because Annunziata is kind of just like Smith down here in North America. So if you travel around the southern part of Italy throughout Naples, you're going to encounter a lot of Annunziatas. So it's a common name when you're in Naples, but not so common here in North America.
So are we saying then you're margarita pizza with the San Marzano pomodori? Is that what you are?
There you go, buddy. Exactly. The simpler, the better. You got to understand, we're all peasants. So we're raised on peasant food, and that's still pretty much my favorite cuisine. And, hey, you don't get to be 300 pounds and play in the CFL, eating, some of this, sliced white bread kind of stuff. It's all that pasta and all that good peasant food from the garden. So it all panned out. It all worked out very well.
I mean, you had to teach a lot of the cakes on your team, I'm guessing.
It was good to actually give him an education on what real food was.
Yeah,
and that's the great thing. I mean, that's the great thing about playing in the CFL. It's the diversity, and you get to meet people from all different parts of the world and all different parts of North America, and you just kind of share in those experiences. And trust me, when you're an offensive lineman, food is a very, very important part of that experience.
Hey, Sandy, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Again, we know your busy schedule, but it was a real pleasure, and we'd love to catch up with you again sometime if you've got the time.
Hey, anytime, guys.